by Purdue Pharma, the makers of OxyContin, one of the most abused drugs in America. And what's kind of doubly interesting here is that Patrick Kennedy had to resign Congress in disgrace because it came out that he was abusing alcohol, cocaine, and OxyContin. He was addicted to OxyContin. And yet, so he was at this rally focused narrowly on marijuana, saying that this is the biggest danger to society. But his appearance that day was sponsored by the drug that actually poses a much bigger threat and actually ruined his career, and that's OxyContin.
Well, as legislation moves forward, media coverage of marijuana is growing up a bit, if you will. Do you see improved reporting with regard to the real stories of marijuana legalization?
Oh, you know, Janine, there are very good reports out there, some substantive reporting on the drug war, on criminal justice reform. But if you look at the big picture, there's still huge problems. And one great example is the recent coverage of the border crisis of all of these immigrant families of these children who are refugees of the drug war who are coming to the border. But if you look at the coverage, the context isn't there. You don't see reporters explaining that many of these families are escaping drug cartels, drug wars that have been funded by U.S. tax dollars in Latin America. Instead, it's kind of seen as a political football. And if you look closely at legislative efforts to reform marijuana and the big ballot measures this year, you don't see the money and politics angle of these lobbying debates. So that's unfortunate.
Well, if we're going to talk about drug war, then that also brings in law enforcement, and your piece does address that as well.
Yeah, law enforcement is the other kind of big muscle brought to bear on these marijuana fights. If you talk to rank-and-file police officers, many of them would not like to prioritize marijuana, but there are strong financial incentives that have basically brought all of their lobbyists, their representatives, their law enforcement unions into fighting marijuana reform tooth and nail, and that's because marijuana has simply become a cash cow for law enforcement. And there's two reasons for that. The first reason is that since the Reagan years, law enforcement has been encouraged to use something called asset forfeiture in drug busts. So when they go after marijuana or other drugs, they're able to seize any property associated with drug dealers and auction it off. In some cases, pocketing the money individually for the officers, other times the money going directly to police departments. And this is big money because marijuana is one of the easiest drugs to go after. Between 2002 and 2012, law enforcement collected about $1 billion from marijuana busts. So this is a huge source of revenue that they would not like to give up. And the other big aspect of this is that for many years, the Department of Justice has authorized grant programs, grant money to law enforcement with strings attached, saying that they must prioritize drug busts. And again, the easiest type of drug bust is marijuana. I've talked to state legislators who have met with law enforcement as they're dealing with this type of legislation, and they're fighting marijuana reform. In public, they'll say that this is because they don't want another dangerous drug on the streets. But in private, they've been telling these politicians, we don't want to lose the money.
All right, then. Well, let's hope that as this story goes forward, as it will, journalists turn from sort of the sillier aspects of marijuana legalization and legislation and get into some of this more serious material like you're doing. You think that's going to happen?
Fingers crossed.
Okay, then. We've been speaking with Lee Fang. You can read his story, The Real Reason Pot is Still Illegal, at thenation.com. Thank you very much, Lee Fang, for joining us this week on Counterspin.
Janine, it was a pleasure talking to you. Thanks for having me.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by FAIR, the National Media Watch Group based in New York. For more information about FAIR, you can check out our website, fair.org. The show is engineered by Kelly Spivey. With me is Steve Rendell. I'm Janine Jackson. Thanks for listening to Counterspin.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 6:03. Next is Bread and Roses.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of PDX Pop Now 2014. From Friday, July 18th until Sunday, July 20th, PDX Pop Now will host bands on two stages, celebrating and supporting all ages music in the city of Portland, with bands such as The Bugs, The Portland Cello Project, The Estranged, Purse Candy, Orchestra, Pacific Tropicale, Summer Cannibals, and many more. PDX Pop will take place at Audio Cinema, 226 Southeast Madison Avenue in Portland. More information about PDX Pop Now 2014 can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Welcome to Bread and Roses. I'm Ashley Thurstrup, and I'll be your host for the evening. Tonight, I'm excited to bring you an interview with Kate Hill, director of Portland Hearing Voices. We will explore the experiences of women often stigmatized with various labels associated with mental illness. Portland Hearing Voices is a community group aiming to promote mental diversity. They foster public education, discussion groups, training, and community support related to hearing voices, seeing visions, and having unusual beliefs and sensory experiences, often labeled as psychosis, bipolar, mania, paranoia, schizophrenia, and other mental disorders. They aim to reduce fear and misunderstanding, question stereotypes, promote holistic health options, overcome isolation, and create a more inclusive community. Stay tuned for that interview. But first, the feminist news from Feminist Majority Foundation. 1 in 4 Americans lived in a high poverty area in 2012, according to a recently released report titled Changes in Areas with Concentrated Poverty, which analyzes data from the United States Census Bureau and the American Community Survey. The 77 million Americans who live in poverty areas, defined as an area where over 1/5 of the residents earn incomes below the current poverty level of $23,600 for a family of four, is a significant increase from the 18% recorded by the Census Bureau in 2000. Southern states, which have been found to have a higher percentage of low-income public school students than others, have especially seen their numbers grow. In 2012, 57% of people living in the South lived in poverty areas, up from nearly 47% in 2000. The increase has affected Americans across the board, but the report found that African Americans are the most likely to live in poverty areas at 50.4%, followed by American Indians and Alaskan Natives. About 20.3% of white Americans live in poverty areas. The growth of poverty areas can largely be attributed to exclusionary zoning and the migration of affluent people into suburban areas. And on top of higher crime, lower wages, and schools lacking in resources, low-income families living in concentrated poverty areas often face a lack of job opportunities and a lack of access to good housing conditions and health services, and this disproportionately affects women. The report acknowledges that some government programs focus on these neighborhoods to alleviate poverty and other issues that face their residents. However, more needs to be done.
In light of the Supreme Court decision, 5-4 decision in Burnwell versus Hobby Lobby, several LGBT rights groups have withdrawn their support for the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, citing increased concern about the religious exemptions included in the bill. The National Gay and Lesbian Task Force Action Fund on Tuesday was the first LGBT rights organization to withdraw its support for the Employment Non-Discrimination Act on the grounds that the religious exemption might, quote, be used as a similar license to discriminate across the country, end of quote. The American Civil Liberties Union, Gay and Lesbian Advocates and Defenders, the National Center for Lesbian Rights, and the Transgender Law Center subsequently withdrew their support. In a joint statement, the groups noted, quote, the Supreme Court's decision in Hobby Lobby has made it all the more important that we not accept this inappropriate provision. The Employment Non-Discrimination Act prohibits employment discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity. The bill, however, contains an exemption for religious organizations. According to the joint statement, the act's discriminatory provision, unprecedented in federal laws prohibiting employment discrimination, could provide religiously affiliated organizations, including hospitals, nursing homes, and universities, a blank check to engage in workplace discrimination against LGBTQ people, end of quote. The Senate voted 64-32 to pass the Employment Non-Discrimination Act in November. It is unlikely to be taken up in the House. President Obama has announced that he will sign an executive order prohibiting employment discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation for federal contractors, but some religious groups have insisted that the president add a, quote, robust religious exemption for groups with religious objections to homosexuality. Meanwhile, Senate Democrats are expected to introduce the Protect Women's Health from Corporate Interference Act today to reverse the Hobby Lobby decision to ensure that for-profit corporations could not use the Religious Freedom Restoration Act to avoid complying with the Affordable Care Act contraceptive coverage benefit. The bill would maintain the religious exemption and condemnation. Several religiously affiliated nonprofits have challenged the ACA despite the accommodation as a violation of their religious freedom.
And you're listening to Bread and Roses. That was just news from the Feminist Majority Foundation. Stay tuned after this short break. We're going to be coming right back with an interview with Portland Hearing Voices. We're just listening to They Told Me by local band Sally Ford and The Sound Outside. This is Bread and Roses, and now we're pleased to bring you a conversation with Kate Hill of Portland Hearing Voices. Tell us about your work, and what are some of your goals in this work besides promoting mental diversity, and what does that mean to you?
Well, what we do is we organize and facilitate support and community groups for people who hear voices, see visions, and experience altered states of consciousness and reality. Some of the things that we're working on presently is developing trainings for specifically for experiencers to continue these groups, basically. Another thing is that we're working with mental health professionals to form the groups. And also sometimes we try to work with family members as well.
Family members who might be kind of struggling with how to handle a family.
Yeah. Yes, how to handle their family members that are experiencing extreme states.
Yeah, so it seems like you are really a community-driven grassroots sort of effort here, and getting your consumers or the community members involved themselves is really cool. But I imagine there might be some struggles with that too. Do you have is it a small organization?
It's a pretty small organization. Yeah. There's just a few of us. We have a lot of people who attend our groups, but not a whole lot of people who run them and facilitate them and do all of the, kind of work behind the scenes.
Is it empowering for the people that come in and kind of take over or start running the groups themselves? Have you seen this happen yet?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's empowering for everybody involved. When you have someone who is an attendee for a little while and then they do decide to start facilitating groups, or sometimes we'll have people, put on fundraisers or, exercise whatever strengths that they want to exercise for the benefit of the group. It's very empowering to them. And it's a wonderful process to watch someone go through and to go through yourself.
Yeah, with them. That's great. So since medical professionals usually define hearing voices as a symptom of mental illness, how does your organization kind of counterbalance this viewpoint? This is the crux of your organization in a lot of ways. So
One of the things that is very helpful in our organization is that we have a pretty balanced power dynamic within the group, and it's pretty amazing the sort of things that people will open up with, and the things that people will express when they're among equals and when they're among their peers. And it's not necessarily the sort of thing that can happen when they're in the midst of an imbalanced power dynamic, such as the type of when, someone is with their doctor or, someone else who has a lot of power over their lives. We listen non-judgmentally. We have an approach that basically, states that we're not here to assign any sort of meaning to your experience, but you are in charge of that. And so I think that's really good for people to experience. And once they're able to kind of relax and let go of, the tension, that comes with the other things, then they can start to explore their own experiences for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, many people, I think, especially if they've been diagnosed young or early with a mental health symptom or mental health condition or a label, probably have never had that ability to really explain what's happening for them without somebody immediately labeling it for them. So what is that like for people in the beginning when they start to kind of unpack it?
Oh my goodness. What's happening? It's magical, quite frankly. It's pretty incredible what happens when people start to, stretch out their wings and learn what they're actually capable of on their own. Sometimes it's not a very graceful process, Sometimes people don't necessarily know what to do with their power, but the learning curve is essential. Everybody, kind of needs to go through that, in one way or another. So it's quite a beautiful thing, and it's a privilege to watch it.
So for those listeners who've just tuned in, I'm speaking tonight with Kate Hill from Portland Hearing Voices, and this is a group that's promoting mental diversity and equality with folks who hear voices and experience altered states. So for some of our listeners who maybe aren't so familiar with this experience, could you describe what altered state or a hearing voice can be like? Is it possible to describe for people that have never experienced it?
It's very possible to describe. It's absolutely doable. It's not easy to generalize. So, people can experience these things in just about any way that they can experience anything that is sensory oriented. So sometimes people will hear voices. Sometimes people will feel voices as though it is, some sort of vibration that's entering into them or touching them in some way. People will have tactile sensations that they can't explain. Sometimes, a lot of times, people will smell things that they can't explain. It's really across the board. And people will describe lots of different experiences as voices. And sometimes that is audio, and sometimes it's not.
And is it something that happens during one particular period of a person's life, or do you find that the experiences vary so much?
It varies so much. A lot of people feel like it corresponds to stress in the person's life. I don't know about that. I can't really say. In my experience and from, you know, everyone that I've talked to, it just kind of comes and goes, or it's constant.
So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Bread and Roses. And Bread and Roses is a feminist radio show interested in illuminating issues of oppression in many forms. So not just issues of oppression towards women, but issues of oppression that affect all people in our community. So it's no secret in the Portland area that people perceived to have mental illness are treated unfairly and even recklessly by many people in the helping profession. So, you know, therapists, police officers, we all know what happened with James Chasey. Can you give us some examples from what you hear of ways that people in the helping profession might be doing more harm than good?
I can give a few examples. This is a pretty tough area, but there's kind of a lot to talk about, unfortunately. I would say a lot of it starts with the dehumanization process, which happens relatively quickly. But I've heard a lot of stories of over-medication, of forced over-medication, of people being coerced by their doctors, people feeling threatened by mental health practitioners, saying something along the lines of, oh, you don't want to go back to the hospital, do you? And whatnot, which can be a really easy thing to say if you feel like you're not speaking to somebody who is aware of what's going on. So unfortunately, that's the kind of thing that happens. In my opinion, one of the worst things that happens is that people end up being alienated from themselves and taught not to trust themselves. And if you don't trust yourself, it's going to be more difficult for you to find your way out of a dark period of your life. So one of the things that we really try to do is help people to learn to trust themselves again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to find the tools to break free maybe from that power imbalance that they've been experiencing for many years.
For sure.
That's really great work. And how did you personally get involved in this work? Could you share with us a little bit, or even how it's changed you, perhaps?
I can share a little bit. I had a voice hearing experience when I was 17 that lasted between 3 and 4 years, and it had a profound effect on my identity. I did not tell any mental health professionals about it just because I did not feel like it was mental health related. And that ended up, I think, probably being good for me in the long run. But later on, I sort of made this connection that what I had experienced was an extreme state. And as much as I still honor that state that I was in, I need to talk about it. And, you know, it's something that I actually enjoy talking about and didn't feel safe talking about anywhere until I went to Portland Hearing Voices. So it had a profound effect on me personally. And I'm just kind of been there ever since. So.
Yeah, and do you remember when you emerged, or when, like, is it a process of coming out of it, or do you go in and out? What's that like?
What do you mean?
With the voices, you said it lasted for 4 years, mm-hmm. So I'm assuming that maybe you don't get them as much anymore, or not at all. I don't know. No, she's shaking her head.
No, so. I don't get it at all anymore. Sometimes I wish I did. I'm sure there will be a lot of people who would not be happy to hear me say that. But I think it's different for everybody. You know, some people come in and out of it, or, you know, it comes and goes, which is a different experience. For me, it came and went, you know, and it was pretty much as simple as that.
Mm-hmm. just hearing this, you know, and hearing how you describe it, I've never heard anybody kind of describe their experience in a way where it's like, oh, I miss it. It was something very special. And to me, it really seems like maybe a divine presence or something was with you. So is that something that people that you experience or that you ever attribute to your?
Absolutely. I've always been a spiritual person. And I feel like it is just a way that some people are. And my voice was much like a spirit guide that came to me.
And at Portland Hearing Voices, I researched you and read on your website that often you do help people tap into their spirituality or creativity when they're kind of working on these on this issue or helping their voices maybe not seem scary. So can you talk about that?
Well, I think it's something that kind of comes naturally. And again, I just want to, make sure that you cannot, make sure that everybody knows that you cannot generalize these things. So I apologize if I sound like it. It kind of gets difficult to talk about it without a little bit of that, though. I think a lot of people will naturally attribute their experiences to some kind of spiritual phenomenon. And that's very comfortable for some people. You know, they feel like they have psychic abilities. You know, they feel like angels or, you know, their past, their passed on relatives are speaking to them, whatnot. There's all sorts of things. So I think that by, you know, simply creating the space for someone to figure out what that means to them will automatically, kind of bring them back to their own spirituality.
Which can be a healing force.
Certainly, absolutely.
Yeah. Statistics show that men and women are diagnosed with schizophrenia, you know, which is a commonly used label, I think, to describe this experience at the same rate. So are there certain ways that women tend to potentially experience altered states differently? And not to generalize again, but have you heard different experiences from men versus women? And I ask because it's Bread and Roses. This is a feminist radio show. So I'm really interested in the experiences of women.
You know what? If the voice hearing population was safe enough to be open, we would definitely see correlations between, patterns in men and women in their, sort of extrasensory experiences. At this point, to me personally, it feels pretty random, so it's hard to keep track of something like that. There is a website, Intervoice, which is the U.S. Hearing Voices hub, basically, and they're always taking surveys and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So it's possible that information would be on their site.
You know, I found it very exciting and interesting that there is such an international community that's really embracing the fact that there are so many folks out there that experience altered states and empowering each other. So can you talk about how these different internet groups might help people connect throughout the world and empower people? What's all out there?
Oh, man. Well, there are a ton of groups. There aren't nearly as many groups in the U.S. as there are in Europe. And I don't know this from personal experience. Just I'm told that Hearing Voices groups are as common as AA groups over there. Yeah. So, that idea is pretty exciting because the diversity within the Hearing Voices community itself is so vast that you really could have a ton of different groups promoted to all sorts of different things. And I think people would just benefit from them a lot. But one of the things that, Intervoice, for example, has, they have a group listing, basically. So you can go on their site and look and see where all of the registered Hearing Voices groups are. Not all of the Hearing Voices groups are on that website, though, because they don't all know about it. You know, we are very, kind of dispersed and disconnected from each other a lot. So when we find each other, we really kind of try and, stay in contact and work together and whatnot.
But that's great. And so you're referencing Hearing Voices groups. And I would love to talk about, for our listeners to talk about these groups and where people might access these groups and hear a little bit more about what happens at these groups for anybody who might be kind of on the fence about potentially going to a space. So tell us what's happening in the Portland area, if you can.
Well, in the Portland area right now, I think we have two groups, to my knowledge. There's Light of Madness that meets at PSU, and then there's Portland Hearing Voices. And Portland Hearing Voices is specifically for people who have the voices, visions, and alter states, experiences. And what we generally do in group is we read our preamble, kind of talk about what our values are, the fact that we listen non-judgmentally, we're not medical professionals, we're here to create space for each other, and that, one of the big things is that it's perfectly fine to hear something that you disagree with, and, we're all okay with that. And so then we make any sort of announcements, upcoming events, and then we just kind of talk to each other. And, sometimes it'll be on one topic and everybody will comment, and sometimes we'll all just, sort of take turns talking about, what we've been experiencing lately, or what we've been struggling with, or what we've really been enjoying. It's really quite across the board. And, a lot of times we end up getting a little silly, and it can be kind of magical.
Yeah. And I understand that one of your groups that started recently has many attendees. It's kind of like the Portland area has been waiting for this type of thing to happen. So
yeah,
it's exciting.
Yeah. And people will watch it for a while, because it can be kind of nerve wracking to decide to go to a group, for the first time. And sometimes people are a little nervous when they first get there. Sometimes yeah, they'll wait, and then they'll come in and say, "Oh, I've been waiting to come here for years."
So if folks that are listening, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Bread and Roses. We are a feminist news and public affairs show here every Friday night at 6 p.m. on KBOO FM. Tonight, I am interviewing Kate Hill, who is the director of Portland Hearing Voices, and we're talking about the groups and the work that they're doing to promote mental diversity in the Portland community. So how can some of our listeners get in touch with you if they are interested in maybe attending one of these groups, or just have questions?
My email is on the website. It's kate@portlandhearingvoices.net. We also have a Facebook page, and either one of those should work just fine.
And portlandhearingvoices.com?
.net.
.net. Okay.
Thank you for asking.
Yes. Fabulous. I think it's also very interesting that you're doing this work and potentially going out and educating therapists and mental health counselors about an alternative way of helping people mm-hmm. who are experiencing this. So do you have a mental health background yourself?
I have an interest in psychology, and I've read a lot about it, I used to work as a residential counselor at a mental health facility.
Yeah.
I totally forget about that. So sort of, I worked in the mental health field for a little while.
Yeah, it's a really refreshing, interesting way to kind of, just shake it up a little bit. What it's not the typical dogmatic way of sharing information and teaching. It's a little bit of changing the paradigm from academia, I guess. So yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
That's great. Yeah. So your mission involves educating people about what it means to have these experiences of altered states, and also what it doesn't mean. So I know there's a lot of stereotypes out there. Can you talk a bit about this work and helping people?
About what it doesn't mean?
Yeah. I guess what I'm saying is that there's stereotypes out there about what people can and can't do if they've been diagnosed and they've been labeled. And these can be really limiting to people that maybe have these. And so, I don't know.
So one of the things that I hear, occasionally, is that people who hear voices are dangerous. And that's something that's a huge misconception. I'm not exactly sure where it came from. I was at a community dinner one time, mm-hmm. and I had, told this gentleman what I did. And I think he said something along the lines of, you'd be surprised how many people who hear voices are genuinely dangerous. And I just didn't even think about it. I was like, you would be surprised how many people who don't hear voices are genuinely dangerous. That's a terrible thing to say. Of all of the voice hearers that I have known, I don't think I ever thought any of them were dangerous at all. You know, they're beautiful and they're my friends. Sorry not to get too personal. Another thing that I think people hear a lot is that they can't work, and that the things that they're experiencing aren't real. And those are very disempowering things to hear, and they're extremely disempowering things to believe. Mm-hmm. They're myths. They're not true. There are, you know, I think according to a lot of the Hearing Voices research, the majority of people who hear voices live and work just fine. And, you know, people simply learn how to deal with them, how to cope with them. And a lot of times they're actually enjoyable experiences. You know, they are spirit guides. They're, you know, buddies. I know, you know, one person told me that her voices, you know, just sit around and try and make her laugh all the time. You know, like it's really across the board. So those are a couple of things that are not true.
Yeah, and I can just imagine how if you're hearing this coming in at you all the time from different people in different areas, from your therapist, from your parents, after a while you start to believe it, right? So
it's kind of hard to block that voice out for that long. I think the way that some people experience it even is that their voices take, you know, sort of the form of their abusers or, you know, people that, you know, they've had in their lives, you know, previously. And so they'd repeat the things that the people in their lives say. So it would make sense if they hear the, you know, public repeat the same things over and over again, that eventually, you know, they will just hear it automatically.
Yes. You know, another way to deal with the voices that's commonly a common practice is through medication. So how does your group view medication management? Or if somebody is interested in maybe coming to your group, but they're currently taking medication, what are your views on that?
Oh, we're completely pro-choice on medication. You know, like my personal belief and the beliefs of Portland Hearing Voices is that what somebody chooses to put in their body is their choice. How you want to manage your life is up to you, and we will support you in that.
Excellent. Yeah. And so there's a kind of a mix of people that you're working with.
Yeah,
in your
huge
group.
Mix.
Yeah.
Which is why we have to, you know, agree to disagree sometimes.
Yeah. So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Bread and Roses, and I'm here tonight with Kate Hill from Portland Hearing Voices. If you are enjoying this this show and you would like to get in contact with Kate, we're going to have her information in Portland Hearing Voices, a link to their webpage up on the KBOO.FM webpage, and you can also go directly to their site, PortlandHearingVoices.net. There are many great resources there as well. So it's a great website to go just to peruse around if you have a loved one that you care about, if you yourself experience altered states, or if it's something you're just curious about. Also, I saw a guidebook for the media about how to handle, how to work with the, you know, these issues in an encompassing, embracing way. And so I really liked that. I can't remember if I saw that on your website or one of the UK websites, because they seem to be ahead of the game there. So it was really cool. So for any of you any other journalists out there listening, definitely something to check out. And then you know, while I was doing my research for this show, I read that there's been many examples of people throughout history who've really learned to thrive while experiencing altered states. So do you know, or can you tell us any stories of these people?
I can't say I can tell really long stories about them, but I know a few of them. Believe Moses and Jesus both heard voices. I know Socrates heard voices. Charles Dickens heard voices. A lot of times he apparently would talk about how he would get so wrapped up into the characters of his books that they, you know, came alive and he would interact with them. John Forbes Nash, who won the Nobel Prize for his work in game theory, heard voices as well.
So a lot of our, you know, the greatest minds of our times have, experienced altered states at some point in their life. And how common is it? Do you know what the statistics are?
2 to 10%.
Wow.
We believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of them are children. I think it's important to note that a lot of our younger people experience these things too.
Yeah, which is interesting, and maybe, you know, a lot of people shuttle their child off very quickly to the psychiatrist if they hear of anything abnormal, of what's not in the status quo. And so it's important to remember that, there are amazing people who've started out. I think Beethoven started playing music at a very early age, and who knows? Mm-hmm. Or it was Mozart, you said. I'm sorry. Okay, so... And the one thing I'm also curious about, that there are a lot of stereotypes out there of people experiencing altered states in a way that can feel really scary, maybe for others, and perhaps, or they're perceiving them to be scary or dangerous. You mentioned this earlier, but what about for the folks that are hearing their voices or their altered states, and it can be really abusive and overwhelming to them? Do you help people cope through those experiences?
I certainly hope so. A lot of people, you know, come to our groups and, you know, they have good experiences, bad experiences, annoying experience all over the place. Sometimes those experiences are extremely frightening. And so my hope is that to go into an environment that allows you to talk about it openly, without any pressure, without, you know, trying to judge or diagnose or treat or preach, they can relax and explore their experience. And I would say that's one of the best things that, you know, someone can do when they're experiencing something so frightening.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause it actually takes the power back again into their, yeah. So really, I mean, you're helping me to understand, and our listeners, I think too, that it does have a lot to do with this power dynamic that, that folks experience all too regularly.
It does. It's huge.
Yeah. In the mental health field. So if there are listeners out there who are feeling like they would like to either try going to one of these groups or potentially even going off of psychiatric medications, how do you counsel people through this at Portland Hearing Voices, or what's your advice? I know there's a guide.
Yeah. Will Hall wrote the harm reduction guide to coming off of psychiatric medication. That should be available through the website. If you just, you know, Google harm reduction guide to coming off of medication or Will Hall, you'll find it. And I think you can just download it. But that has a lot of good insight as far as, you know, how do you make this sort of decision? Are you prepared to? What's the safest way to go about doing it? So just to try and be as mindful as possible, you know, while you're making a decision like that, so that you can stay, you know, safe. Mm-hmm. That's the most important thing.
Yeah, and perhaps doing it in conjunction with your doctor, if your doctor's supportive.
Yeah, there's a lot of extremely supportive doctors out there, and a lot of doctors will help you get off of your medications. And you know, like a lot of people try vitamin supplements. When I was coming off of my medication, I did vitamin and herbal supplements, and that worked really well for me.
Nice. Yeah, I had the privilege of hearing Will Hall, who I think was one of the founders of...
He's the founder.
The founder of Portland Hearing Voices. And I had the privilege of hearing him speak once, and he described his experience, even to this day, as, you know, being a finely tuned instrument, and, you know, how we can... You really need to make sure you're feeding your soul and feeding yourself in order to kind of stay in tune.
Yes.
So I really liked that analogy, and that, you know, even little things like too much coffee or not enough sleep can really like kind of set it off. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. So having this embracing community around you, I imagine is very, very helpful and very supportive for folks.
I believe so.
Yeah. That's great. Do you have any practical advice for our listeners who might either hear voices or experience altered states, or have a loved one who's struggling with this? Like, what can they do today or tomorrow to kind of help manage through these experiences?
Probably one of the most important things I would say is to relax and breathe, and just, you know, be aware that it's just an altered state, and, you know, humans have been experiencing them, you know, since the dawn of time, and to approach it with curiosity, I would say, is one of the best things that you can do. I wouldn't work so hard at, you know, trying to dissect the situation or interpret it. Just let it be as it is. And, you know, if you, you know, just I don't know, I would say read a lot, you know, do some research, you know, come to group, talk to people, find other people who experience the same things. I would say.
Do you know of any hotlines that where there's understanding folks on the other side?
I know the warm line. The warm line, from what I understand, is great.
Okay, great. So if folks out there are listening and you want to find out more information, you can Google the warm line or find them through PortlandHearingVoices.net. Or actually, we can put it up at KBOO.FM. We can put the information up there.
The warm line is more is for people who just need to talk, basically. But you're looking, you're talking about like an informational hotline?
Yeah. Maybe it doesn't exist, but I know there's a lot of great information on the web about this topic, and there's guidebooks and there's supportive people out there. Mm-hmm. And that's great.
Yeah. And if anybody has questions, they can contact me and I'll do, you know, whatever I can to help you out.
Great. So, you know, the work of Portland Hearing Voices is really about educating, it seems, as one, empowering, and helping people that are experiencing altered states. So what can people do to help support your work?
Spread the word is one of the most important things. You know, we need to create a safe community for our voice hearers to be themselves in. And that's probably one of the most important things that you can do. We also need support. If, you know, we want to provide as many groups as possible, we want to provide trainings. We have a lot to offer the community, but we have little resources. So support in any sort of way is also appreciated.
Absolutely. Great. So if you've been listening to the show and you've been enjoying it, I'm here with Kate Hill. My name's Ashley. I'm with Bread and Roses. We are the Feminist News and Public Affairs radio program here on KBOO-FM Fridays at 6 p.m. And I'm with Kate Hill from Portland Hearing Voices. We've been talking about the work that Portland Hearing Voices is doing in the Portland area to celebrate and embrace mental diversity and to bring awareness to those experiencing altered states and family members and the community in general of how to support folks. So it's been great having you here. I'm wondering if you, before you leave, if you could tell us in general terms about any sort of success stories for those out there who might still be struggling a little bit and not recognizing how they themselves can, I don't know, embrace their own states. Do you have any success stories to share?
There are quite a few success stories. I can't, you know, obviously I can't, you know, share names or anything like that, but we did have someone recently who was coming to group who unfortunately got sort of swept up in the system a bit, which took a lot of her personal power away from her. But in the process, she was able to find her personal meaning for her experiences, and coming, you know, back to group and having made that personal decision of what her experiences meant to her and what she was going to do with this information was absolutely incredible. She just looked like a brand new woman, and she was determined, and she was very excited, and I can see it happening. And so that's one success story.
That's great. And it's great to hear the work that you're doing. So thanks so much again for being on Bread and Roses. Can you give your contact information one more time for...
Yes, my email address is kate@portlandhearingvoices.net. And we are also Portland Hearing Voices on Facebook.
All right. Have a great evening. You've been listening to Bread and Roses.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space. Make me cry.
Listening to Bread and Roses. We just heard an interview with Kate Hill from Portland Hearing Voices about mental diversity and how to help embrace some of the experiences that folks have around hearing voices and experiencing altered states, rather than jump to kind of the typical modern medical way of silencing those voices through medication. So it's a great organization that's doing a lot of grassroots advocacy work in that area, Portland Hearing Voices. If you're interested in finding out more about them, please contact them through portlandhearingvoices.net. I also wanted to let all of the listeners know that there is a group that's happening. It's called Voices, Visions, and Extreme States, and it's a support group. And it's happening at Outside In every Friday from 6 to 7:30. And it's open to people who are experiencing unusual beliefs, altered states, hearing voices, disturbing energy, and experiences sometimes labeled as psychiatric disorders. It's inclusive, it's non-judgmental, and it's for folks that are taking medications and not taking medications. Everyone's welcome. It's free, it's a drop-in, and it's confidential. So please, you can just head on down there any Friday night. It's at Outside In at 1132 Southwest 13th Avenue from 6 to 7:30. And it's not happening tonight, but it will be happening next week. So head on down. I wanted to turn now to an event that's happening this weekend, actually tomorrow, Saturday, July 12th, from 12 to 4. And it's a Women's Motivational Healing Fair. And it's put on by a woman named Melanie Powell, who's very, very inspirational. She has quite the story to tell. I'm going to tell you a little bit about her. She was going to be here and join us tonight, but she's busy getting ready for this event. So she's a woman who grew up here in Portland in a single family home, you know, where they had very little money. And she found herself kind of running the streets as a teenager. And she made a lot of choices that landed her in unhealthy places, doing unhealthy things. And by the time that she was 18, she was a mother of four, and she was struggling to survive a highly abusive relationship. So trying to cope, she found herself addicted to drugs and traveling on a path of destruction. Her children were taken away by Child Protection Services, and she said she spent a lot of years lost, scared, and full of shame and guilt. So she actually hated who she'd become, and she ended up in prison. Her addictions led her to criminal activity and prostitution, homelessness, and eventually jail. And when she was incarcerated, she found out what she needed to do with her life. And she actually claims that now this is one of the best things that ever happened to her. So she went into an inpatient program and came out clean and sober, and you know, learned how to become a better mom, went back to school, and now today is an RN, a nurse, a registered nurse. And she's actually founded this motivational healing fair that's happening tomorrow because she has a very strong desire to help others do the same. So this fair is from 12 to 4, and it's at Legacy Emmanuel Hospital, which is 2801 North Gottenbein Avenue. There's going to be tons of resources there. People like Project Clean Slate, Northwest Housing Alternative, Central City Concern, Women of Wisdom, Iron Tribe, great organizations. And it's going to be something that will be quite unforgettable. She's going to speak, she's going to share her story, and there will be opportunities to network and learn from these resources. And there's also going to be a lot of gifts and free food and performances. So if any of you out there are listening and you want to experience a true motivational experience tomorrow and go to this fair and network with some amazing people, again, it's at Legacy Emmanuel Hospital, 2801 North Gottenbein. And that's in Portland, Saturday, July 12th from 12 to 4. And it is called Never Give Up. So please head on over there. You've been listening tonight to Bread and Roses. I've been your host. I'm Ashley Thurstrup. And Bread and Roses is a collective of women-identified radio activists. We offer feminist public affairs programming, and we give voice to those working for social justice and equity, both globally and locally. And we strive to challenge systems of oppression. All this, and we have a lot of fun. So if you're interested in joining our collective, we're always looking for women-identified folks to learn engineering and production radio skills alongside us. We're also always interested in your story ideas, so contact us by going to www.kboo.fm/breadandroses. I want to thank our engineer, Delphine, and I want to thank you for listening. Have a great evening, and stay tuned for Hard Knock Radio.
When you see that ship, it is the ship you can't see. When the gray ship calls, it is a
listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. We are listening to the end of Bread and Roses and going into Hard Knock Radio, so keep it locked. News, views, and hip-hop.
wants you. Yes, you. Are you excited about the new possibilities for local independent media? Are you ready to help KABU reach out and grow stronger in the community? We're looking for candidates for KABU's board of directors, and we've extended our search through July 31st. So if you'd like to share your skills with the people who share your values, download a copy of our board candidate package at kboo.fm. Or you can pick up a copy at the station during business hours. We're located at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. Applications must be received by 5 p.m. July 31st, so don't delay. And we look forward to seeing more of you at KABU.
This is M1 from Dead Prez.
Hey, what's up? This is Boots from The Coup.
Nah, I mean, telling you to stay tuned to Hard Knock Radio.
Keep it locked.
On the move, this is Pam Africa on Hard Knock Radio, the station of resistance.